Welcome to the Did You Know podcast, where the focus is on rare diseases, how modern medicine is treating these conditions, including the latest breakthroughs in research, and how people cope with their diagnosis and healing. Your host is Dana Morrow, known for her video series on YouTube, Twitter, and Facebook called Did You Know Ataxia Facts. 300 videos have been produced and seen in 17 countries to date. And now, your host, Dana Morrow.
Welcome to another episode of the Did You Know podcast. I'm here today with Austin Letcher. He is the Senior Clinical Research Specialist for CORDS. Welcome, Austin.
Hi, Dana. Hello, everybody. It's great to be here on the podcast, and I'm excited to tell everyone a little bit more about CORDS.
Yeah, I'm excited for you to tell them a little bit about CORDS. So, Austin, as you know, the National Ataxia Foundation really does encourage everybody with ataxia to get on the CORDS site and to participate in the registry. And what I've learned over the past few years is that people have had some questions about that. So I'm hoping to take the mystery out of how to register for CORDS. But before we get into those types of conversations, I'd really like for you to tell us a little bit about what you do for CORDS, maybe explain the acronym CORDS, and tell us a little bit about CORDS as well.
I'd love to do that. Yeah, so my role with CORDS primarily requires me working with our partners and researchers. So I'll look for patient advocacy groups in need of patient registry support and reach out to those individuals and kind of explain to them the benefits of CORDS and us being a what I like to call a disease agnostic patient registry. CORDS stands for the Coordination of Rare Diseases at Stanford. So we are primarily a patient registry, first and foremost. And the way we came about is really cool and interesting. Our president of Stanford Research, Dr. David Pierce, actually came to us about 10 years ago now. And he has a lot of experience with Batten disease, which is a rare disease. And he saw firsthand how important a patient registry was to getting a clinical trial started for Batten disease. And when he came to Stanford, it was his initiative that we create a rare disease registry for all rare diseases. Because a lot of these rare disease registries are really functionally very similar to one another. So there's no reason we can't share the resources of one IT team and, you know, marketing team and all the back end stuff across all rare diseases.
And you know,
I'm
so sorry. I was just going to make the point that I think it's good for people to understand that CORDS is a registry for all rare diseases. I think so often, you know, an organization, you know, like us, we say, you know, go to this registry and sign up for ataxia. And then there might be a misconception out there that the registry is only for ataxia. So I think it's a really great qualifying point to say it's not just for ataxia, it's for every rare disease.
Right. But to belabor your point, Dana, we do partner with the National Ataxia Foundation. So that's kind of the next step after we partner with groups like NAF. We develop disease-specific questionnaires to kind of hone in on a little bit more detail. CORDS has a really basic questionnaire with, you know, name, contact info stuff, all that basic contact information you need. But then when we partner with groups like NAF, we can dive in a little deeper and help those groups understand the disease a little bit more, help them share data, help participants get or become aware of more research opportunities.
Yeah, I think that's really important because as somebody who might be affected with the disease, you are very interested in what's being done to help you in some way. And so I think it's really great to, it's great that the registry, allows somebody to see that side of it. And we alluded to this, but I'd like to get into a little bit more detail around why it's so important for somebody with a rare disease to register.
That's a great question. So there's three main points I want to make about this. One, first and foremost, the benefit of participating in the registry is the potential that you might be recruited for a clinical trial or a research study. So you will directly be benefited by a research study or a clinical trial, potentially. That's not the case for everyone, unfortunately, but that possibility is there. Secondly, the data that you contribute to the registry will most certainly go to benefiting future patients and potentially all patients, all current patients, if a researcher accesses that data and gleans insights from it. And I came across an interesting one today talking with a new partner of ours, and you know, he mentioned how important the data is for sibling caregivers. So he was coming at it as the, you know, from the perspective of a father with an individual that had a rare disease and, you know, had siblings that were not affected by that rare disease. But so he really explained how important it is to contribute data for his child with the rare disease to benefit their siblings as well, since they might be caregivers later on as they age. So I really think threefold.
Yeah, I think so too. I think it's so important, and I don't think it's widely known. You know, I think you make a great point with the whole research study and clinical study. You know, if you're in the registry, you have a higher percentage that you may be asked to participate in one of those. I think that's probably what's most widely known about belonging to a registry. So I think that it's important to note the other two points that you made, which was around the data and also around the sibling caregivers. So I think that just gives somebody a wider perspective of what this is all about. Now, we talked about this. Oh, sure. Please, go ahead.
One quick thing to add about that, Dana. You're absolutely right. I think it's really important for individuals to know, too, when they participate in the CORDS registry, we're saving them a lot of headaches, too. So I think there's a lot of people out there that are contacting researchers that are doing studies on ataxia, but they might not be eligible. You know, maybe there's a certain age requirement or a location requirement, or, you know, a specific type of ataxia. So we kind of take the headache out of that for the researcher and the participant, and we'll only contact participants that we believe are the best fit for that study.
Yeah, that's good to know. And that is a relief, because if, as you say, you're doing it on your own, it's a lot of work. And if you marry that with the fact that you have a rare disease, it can be quite exhausting. So that's really great to know. So who needs to register? So we know, you know, the importance of somebody with the rare disease or with ataxia has to register. Are there any other people in that person's social circle that should also register?
That's a great question. Yeah, so we are a disease agnostic patient registry, kind of as we alluded to earlier, but we definitely encourage the undiagnosed and unaffected carriers to enroll. So parents that may not be affected by a rare disease, but carry the gene. Also those that are at risk. So maybe siblings that don't know whether or not they carry the gene, that's okay too. Those are good candidates for clinical trials down the road. But back to the undiagnosed, it's really common for those who are undiagnosed to later on be diagnosed with a rare disease. So that's why we are all inclusive.
Okay. How long does it take for somebody to register? Like, what's the time
the
commitment?
The base of it is probably really, especially when we're considering the ataxia questionnaire, shouldn't take anyone longer than 20 minutes or so. A lot of the basic information is auto-populated from the initial screening form. so you don't have to enter in things twice, and it's really meant to be user-friendly. But yeah, it only takes less than a half an hour from start to finish. And if it takes longer than that, call us up. You'll either get myself or Alyssa on the phone, and we'll help you through it. Or you can email us, too.
Oh, that's great. Now, say I'm in the car and I'm going on a really long trip, and I decide, hey, I'm going to take out my iPhone and I'm going to register. I'm going to take this opportunity to register for Chords. It's a good idea?
No, not yet. It is possible for the very tech savvy to complete these forms on a mobile device, but the platform isn't designed for mobile devices yet. Big yet there. So we really encourage people to complete the forms on a laptop or a desktop. And that's because the forms and the questionnaires themselves are designed to fit those screens best. So when they're crunched into a little small iPhone, sometimes it's really difficult to click yes or no, you know, when they're so close together.
Yeah. And I know because I work on similar things with mobile devices, and I know sometimes there are certain buttons that get cut off so you can't advance to the next screen or stuff like that. So I think that the point that we want to make with this is if you do want to register, please make sure that you're using a computer, either a laptop or a desktop, and really avoid using your mobile device for the register process at this point. But more to come on that, and hopefully down the road you will be able to register on your phone. It sounds like that's what's going to happen.
Stay tuned.
And how important, so we talked a little bit about when that you partner with the National Ataxia Foundation, and that you have a registry that's specific for ataxia. And so when somebody goes in and they fill out that registry, do they have to know what type of ataxia they have? Do they have to identify their type of ataxia when they're filling out the form?
No, not necessarily. So, we get a lot of individuals that designate themselves as ataxia unknown or ataxia other. We do get a few headaches from individuals when they're trying to search for their specific type of ataxia, especially if they don't know the type. I just recommend searching ataxia /other and choose that. You'll still be presented with the National Ataxia Foundation questionnaire, and hopefully later down the road you'll have a diagnosis and we can more specifically refer you to the proper clinical trials and research studies.
Okay. So I want to talk about that in a little more detail in a couple of minutes. But first, I want to explain to our listeners that the National Ataxia Foundation is going to do, they are partnering with CORDS, and they're going to do a webinar like on how to complete the registration. And that is coming up on September 18th. So you guys will want to look out for that and join that conversation. I also know that the National Ataxia Foundation has been given an edited disease list of it contains all the numbers that pertain to certain types of ataxia. So that can be provided to you when you're completing the registry so that you know if you are diagnosed with a specific type of ataxia, you know the number reference for that ataxia. Walk me through a basic sign up for the registry. So I want to make sure I'm on my laptop or a desktop. And then what happens? So I log into CORDS. What happens next?
That's right. Yeah. So that's a good point. So if you aren't enrolled, the first step is different than if you're going into update. So let me start with people that have not created an account yet. There's a couple ways you can get to that. You can go to the National Ataxia Foundation website, ataxia.org, and look for the patient registry on there. Or you can go to sanfordresearch.org/CORDS, C-O-R-D-S. And in the middle left-hand side of the screen, you should see an icon that says join now or register now. And if you click that, you'll be presented with what we call our screening form. So that just basically screens people for eligibility, which is generally anyone with a rare disease undiagnosed or unaffected carriers. So pretty much everybody. And you'll just answer some basic contact info to create your account. So once you get past that form right there, you are not enrolled yet. That's a really important thing that I think people forget or don't realize, and that's why we're having this conversation. So the next step, if you choose online, will be to set your username and password. And your username will be automatically generated for you, but you'll set your password and a security question. And if you choose mail-based, we'll mail you a questionnaire within about 5 to 10 business days if you're in the United States. After you set your password and security question, you'll be presented with the your portal, your home screen there, and there should be a big green button that says Start Questionnaire. You want to make sure you keep moving forward to that part and click that big green button. Then you'll be presented with your diagnosis, confirming that it's correct. Then you want to get past informed consent. And that's the big key. We need to make sure patients get past that informed consent in order to consider them enrolled.
Now, and how do they do that?
After they click the green button, they'll be presented with the questionnaire, essentially, the forms. Yep. And then there'll be a save and next button on the top right-hand screen, so they just want to keep reading all the information in front of them and clicking continue. And once they get past the informed consent, we'll ask them a few more questions on their permission for sharing data or being contacted, and then they'll roll into the questionnaire itself.
All right, perfect. So that really defines the process of anybody who's brand new. You've never signed up with CORDS previously, but you want to become part of their registry. It's very important that you create the account, set your password and your security questions, then click on the green button to start the questionnaire and answer those questions, and then make sure that you fill in the consent form. Okay, so once...
Yep, that's right.
So once I've done that, am I going to be notified from CORDS that I am now a member of the registry, or is there any kind of follow-up that happens from CORDS to me?
Yeah, so you'll get a couple automated emails, two right after you set your username and password. So save those emails for a later date. You'll want to save those so you can log back in. The email will have a link to the login where you can go update. And then you'll also get a notification once you've made it past the point where you truly become enrolled, so you've read the informed consent. And then all we ask is that you update your information annually. So if you choose online, we'll send you an automated email once a year asking you to update. But keep in mind, it's okay. You can go in and update at any time. If you update 5 times a year, that's perfectly fine. We just recommend anytime you see your doctor and or there's a change in your symptoms or your health. Or don't forget contact info. You know, that's really important to keep up to date. And then, you know, after that, I want to touch on the mail-based. If you choose mail-based, we'll mail you a new questionnaire out each year. And if nothing has changed, you know, you don't have to mail it back. But if something has changed, go ahead and update those questions, and then we'll enter in that information for you.
Oh, I think the easiest thing, and I try to do this with myself, is I do it on my birthday so that, like, especially for annual things, so that, you know, the next year, I mean, I know it's my birthday and I'll remember, oh, I got to go in and update this.
That's a great idea. Yeah, we send it about on a month in monthly increments, I believe. So if the first time you enrolled was in June, every June you're going to get that. But certainly that's a really good method for remembering too.
Oh, that's good. Now, do I, when I update my information, am I having to re-enter all of the information I provided the first time, or how does the update process work?
No, yeah. So if you choose online, all of that information is saved in the patient enrollment system itself, and we save every iteration of that. So you can go back to past years and look at what information has changed, and the most current iteration or last year's questionnaire will be populated in the screen. So you don't have to complete it multiple times. And that's why we really, you know, push for people to participate online if they can. But mail-based, you know, is another option that isn't quite as user-friendly, but most people use the online.
Okay. Now, is my data protected? So once I enter that information into the system, is it protected?
Yeah. So I think what a lot of people don't know about CORDS is that we're actually a part of a large healthcare organization in the upper Midwest. So we're held to the same data security standards as the healthcare system, the same IT team that manages our patient data in the hospital manages the data within CORDS. So all the information is secure and safe.
That's great. That's good to know, because I know that's a concern of some people. And what happens to the data that I put in there? Do you guys share that information with researchers, or how do researchers end up selecting certain people for studies?
That's a great question. So yeah, the data that everyone that enrolls in CORDS is essentially agreeing to have their de-identified data shared. So emphasis on the de-identified part. When a researcher applies for access to CORDS and they gain access, we will only ever share de-identified data. So we won't share name, we won't share email, address, phone number, or any of that identifiable stuff. We'll just generate a random ID number and share that data with the researchers.
Oh, that's great. That's really good to know. So they're just getting the statistics on a person in terms of like what is their rare disease and what are their symptoms and so forth. And then based on that, they would say, yes, I want this person. They are a perfect candidate for my study.
Exactly. Yeah. So we should be able to report age too. And that's important with a lot of researchers to kind of see the progression of each rare disease. And by getting multiple snapshots from multiple people, and the more snapshots we get from the more people, the smoother the movie picture is. You know, it's almost like each snapshot is a frame in a movie or something to show us the progression of that rare disease. So the more frames we have, the clearer the picture is.
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense. What else do people need to know about the CORDS registry? Is there anything else that we haven't touched on that's important for people to know?
I think it's just to know that they're contributing to a cause, you know, bigger than themselves. Not everyone is really excited about sharing their data because it's really sensitive information. But I think the thing that everyone listening to this podcast can take home is that they own the data. Sanford and CORDS, we don't own it. We don't hold it proprietary. It's there to be used and to be shared. And it's our philosophy that the more it is shared, the more competition that is created to benefit the patient. So the more pharma companies accessing it, the more researchers accessing it and sharing it, the bigger the chances of creating a cure or a treatment. So it really is important for the patients to be at the center of the process. And that's really what we try to do at CORDS.
That's an important piece. I think the other important piece that I took away from conversations that you and I have had is that it's optional whether someone wants to participate or not. So just because they've been identified and, you know, and someone has reached out to them to participate in a study, it is totally optional whether or not they want to do that.
That's a great point. Yeah. So let me explain that process a little bit more and demystify it for everyone. When you are identified, hopefully identified as an individual eligible for a clinical trial or research study, the researcher does not get your information. We'll send you an email, most likely, with that researcher's information and generally like a recruitment flyer. And it's up to you to contact that researcher and identify yourself. So if it's a survey, you know, maybe you don't want to participate in another survey. But if it's a clinical trial, you know, maybe you want to participate in that clinical trial. But it is always up to you.
Yeah, I think that's really important because I think sometimes, Pete, the fear is, you know, I've put my information out there. And as such, that just means that if I get tapped to do one of these things, I have an obligation to do it. And in truth, you don't have an obligation to do it. You can be selective as to what you participate in. So I think that's an important distinction.
That's right. And there's permission and data sharing questions at the beginning of the CORDS questionnaire for you to kind of set your preferences. So you can, if you want to just contribute data to CORDS, you can say no to being contacted for further research. And we'll only use your data, your de-identified data, to share with researchers. We won't contact you for those other research studies. And then you can also choose whether or not you want to participate in studies that involve donating biospecimens or sharing data with other databases.
Now, can you clarify what you mean by biospecimen?
Sure, yeah. So a lot of research sometimes will involve collecting blood to evaluate biomarkers or urine or something like that, or maybe a cheek swab or a spit sample to do some DNA processing. So things like that.
All right. So I think in summary, I would just, you know, some takeaways that I would want people to walk away from this podcast with. It does not take that long to sign up. CORDS and the National Ataxia Foundation are partnering on September 18th. So I would encourage everybody to look for that. That's going to have more specific information about how to register with your with ataxia. It's going to be specific to the ataxia registry. The other thing that I would like to point out to people is that your information is protected. It is not shared. No personal information is shared with any conducting a research study or anyone conducting a clinical trial. And it's optional. So even though you are participating in this, you do not have an obligation to participate in the registry, not the registry, but in the clinical trial or the research study. So I think that that's an important thing to take away from this podcast. Oh, and that's it's free. And also the importance of updating your information anytime there is a change. You can go in and update your information as frequently as needed, or you can just update it annually if there have been no changes to your health or your diagnosis within the year. Anything that I missed that you might want to summarize for people?
Yeah, I think I would just touch on that point again, you know, that it's free. We don't own your data. You own your data, and we don't leverage it, you know, so we don't make any money on this. It's all because it fits the mission of our healthcare system, which is improving the human condition. So we hope that by supporting a rare disease registry, treatments and cures for rare diseases will ultimately benefit not only our own patients, but patients all around the United States and the world.
Yeah, I think that's great. And I did have one other thing that I really want to stress to people. To have the most optimal experience when you're signing up for the registry, it is so important that you do it on either a desktop computer or a laptop. Austin, I really want to thank you for joining me today. This was really informative, and I hope that through our conversation, we've answered many questions for people who have maybe wanted to sign up for the registry in the past, but have just been a little overwhelmed by a couple of things or had questions that they just needed answers to that they didn't have anyone to ask.
Thank you.
Okay, so hopefully you have found this information helpful. Thank you for tuning in to this episode, and until next time, have a great day.